This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to a special Wednesday edition of the Orange Bloods podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum. It's National Signing Day. The hope was to be able to bring, and the hope still is, to do a couple of different podcasts today, kind of discussing the here and the now and the immediate. And here we are. This podcast brought to you here on the Yak.com network via Texas Card House, the number one premium poker club in all of Texas, 183 in Anderson Mill. Check them out. They're one of our favorite people in the entire world. We love playing cards there, and we love the relationship with the people. It's really been a really great partnership and one that I'm happy with from 2018. Okay, so let's start with the basics. This is recorded pre-Tom Herman meeting with the media, but it is post-Noah Kane announcement. It's also post 21 out of 22 commitments, putting pen to paper. Only one guy, Javon Shepherd, the offensive lineman, not signing today. A lot of stuff that we'll get into. Let's just start with the news of the day. No surprises. None. Noah Kane signs with Penn State. We see Isaiah Hookfin sign with Baylor. Those were kind of the two that everybody was keeping an eye on, although everybody, I think, by now understood that, you know, Hookfin was going to go to Baylor, that decision had been made, the Texas coaches had been notified. The Noah Kane decision was the one where there had been some real intrigue. We talked about this on the podcast on Monday, that it felt unlikely for a lot. I dubbed him the Jarvis Moss of the 2019 recruiting class, in that on paper it looked like for a long time that he would end up at Texas. And as a matter of fact, he mentioned in his remarks on ESPN2 today that Texas was a leader for him at one point. And he mentioned LSU as well, that those two schools had been leaders for a while, but Penn State put themselves in a position to win this bad boy. And that's there's no bonuses for being the bridesmaid in recruiting. It's unfortunate. It's sad, because a lot of times those are the ones that you remember forever, the ones that you almost got. But, yeah, there will be no Noah Kane to the University of Texas. It's funny. I was watching his film today, as a matter of fact, his senior film, Game by Game, that he had posted over at Huddle, you know, in the last couple of weeks or so. And I was really reminded, I don't mean to like throw salt in the wound here, but I was reminded why Noah Kane is a national top 100 player. He's not on the level of a guy like Trey Sanders. You know, he's not a guy that, he wouldn't be the top kid in state next year. Oh God, we know that Zach Evans is probably pound for pound the best prospect in the state, regardless of classification, running back out of North Shore. And, you know, his presence and his importance incredibly magnified today with Kane's decision. It, you know, I don't want to say that he's the most important prospect in the 2020 class, but he's the best. You know, Texas has needs elsewhere where you could justify saying importance is a relative term. But the Texas running back room, outside of Keyonte Ingram, and look, we'll see what Darian Brown brings to the table, the lone running back commitment in this class. At the end of the day, you know, the point of recruiting is to accumulate as much elite talent as possible. And, you know, it is a disappointment to not get Noah Kane, even though, you know, the writing was on the wall. Penn State was the betting favorite. He's never quite seemed like a guy that wanted to say, I do. If this were the wedding singer, he would be the fiance who didn't want to get married. And then I guess he wouldn't be the fiance, Glenn, because Glenn was like, well, you've been loyal. You've been there with me for a long time. I should probably get married to you. In reality, Noah Kane, as it relates to his relationship with Texas, was the un-Glenn. He was un-Glenn, non-Glenned. He never felt, you guys have been recruiting me and you're in state and I like you guys enough to say that you're a nice girl, but, you know, married, you know, that just wasn't a thought that he ever seemed comfortable with. And, you know, it is what it is. I think, you know, we think about the running back position, Stan Drayton is a guy that probably warrants some scrutiny right now. It has not been, he has not been a plus recruiter. And given the importance of Zach Evans next season, given that the Longhorns didn't end up with the, won't end up with the running back class this year that they like, given that, you know, Keontae Ingram was a layup for Texas. I wonder today what Tom Herman is thinking about with regards to Stan Drayton and how can he let Stan Drayton be the lead recruiter for Zach Evans? And if not, that's kind of a, that's a problem, right? Your running back recruiter needs to be a rainmaker in recruiting. Generally speaking, that's what running back coaches at the collegiate level are. There are, that's not to say that there aren't guys that can coach, but typically speaking across the country, you know, your running back's coach is usually one of your best recruiters. That's not necessarily a thing that we would say with Stan Drayton. And it does make me wonder a little bit, what do you do with Zach Evans? How do they approach his recruitment moving forward? Could you, can you really trust Stan Drayton to lead a recruitment at that level? It's one of the things I'm thinking about today. You know, Stan Drayton was a guy I brought in because of his coaching chops. We know that Tom Herman has talked about him as a guy that he views as a future head coach one day. Stan Drayton is never going to be a head coach at the collegiate level. Ever. Not, maybe not ever. Like maybe, we, I guess Akron looked at him this year. But here's the thing. Stan isn't a play caller. So it's hard for me to think that barring it being his hometown school or the place where he went to college or something like, or and he's got a boy who's an AD, like barring something like that, Stan Drayton's not a guy that you hire because you want Stan Drayton's offense. So if as an offensive coach, your X's and O's aren't a redeeming quality in terms of an AD looking to hire you, then you better be able to recruit the hell out of some players. And that's not really Stan Drayton's MO. Stan Drayton's a good running backs coach. And I don't think he's head coaching material. And I question a little bit right now whether or not he's Texas good as a recruiter. But, you know, we'll see what happens there. My guess is that that's Tom Herman's boy. And I think any changes that Tom Herman would make to the staff after the season over were going to be really, really tough pills for him to swallow because of the success that the team had on the season this year. On some level, you look at Stan Drayton, you go, well, he had a true freshman and he had a incoming transfer senior running back. And in a couple of months, he made that situation work. Okay, right on. Good job, Stan Drayton. When you look at the running back class, it's not what Texas wanted. So, you know, like I said, I think Stan Drayton has to feel a little scrutiny today. You know, Herb Hand hasn't gotten it done as a recruiter either. And you knew that when you hired Herb Hand. It's funny. If you guys really wanted subscriptions to something, you guys should... one of these days, I might just sell a subscription to the commentary that all of us make in Slack. I once had a guy offer me $5,000. He told me he would pay me $5,000 a year if I gave him a super level of access. And all he wanted from me was when something happened, when I had good stuff, to just give him a call and tell him, tell him what's what. Like, hey, I just heard this. And he wanted super, super levels of secret access. And he offered me $5,000 a year to do it. I turned him down, and I would be lying if I said that every year since I've questioned, why didn't I just take that dude's $5,000 and shoot him a bunch of text messages through the year? I say all of that because if you guys could see the commentary that our staff has in Slack, it probably it'd be quite revealing. And I was having a conversation with Alex yesterday in our group chat about Herb Hand, because this the question of Hook fans going to Baylor? How in the hell can you let that kid go to Baylor? It's not like Texas doesn't have needs up front, even if they're telling him, we think you may be a redshirt, and Baylor is saying, we think you could play right away next year. I mean, this is easy. It's recruiting's not hard. The messaging is the type of thing that a smart person can make up on the fly. If you've ever had any success at all in terms of talking to girls at clubs or bars or church or anywhere else, you can be a good recruiter. So the moment that Isaiah Hookfin tells you, hey, you know, Baylor is telling me that we can play right, I can play right away, you tell him, have you seen our depth chart? Hookfin, if you're good enough to play, you will be a day one starter. Point blank. If you're good enough to play. So we're not telling you that you're definitely going to redshirt. That's up to you. That's all you have to do. It's the only message that needs to be seen. So I don't know. That kid went completely dark after the Baylor visit. So a lot of this stuff isn't yet quite explained. That's like, even though that kid's a project, and he is a project, there's nobody that Texas is looking at along the offensive line right now. And you can always say offensive linemen are all projects. Some guys are more projects than others. I think he falls into the latter. They're all projects, but he's like a project. But Texas needs projects. You know, this isn't an area of the program that's so well. It's not like wide receiver or defensive back, where if Brew McCoy goes to USC, is anybody really going to lose any damn sleep? I mean, he's great. Don't get me wrong. And let me reiterate this again. The purpose of recruiting is to get as much high-level talent as you can, period. So it's possible that I make that comment like, hey, you guys are going to be that devastated if Brew McCoy goes to USC. It's possible that if he signed with Texas, he would be the best player in this class. With all due respect to Jake Smith, with all due respect to Jordan Whittington, you know, with all due respect to Tyler Johnson, who I personally think is the best player in this recruiting class, I would take him over Jake Smith, if I'm being completely honest. It's very close. I think all three of those guys are roughly at the same level, but I was thinking about this yesterday. Where would they rank in the state of Texas for me if they were prospects? And I think I would have Tyler Johnson in a statewide top 10 that includes those guys. I think I would have Tyler Johnson still ranked as the number one guy in his class. But, you know, the thing about McCoy is that, okay, if he doesn't come to Texas, Texas does have Jake Smith. Texas does have Jordan Whittington. I like Kennedy Lewis. I think he may be one of the more underrated guys in this recruiting class because I think he's a four-star talent. Now, if you've been listening to me at all, like four-star talent on some level is faint praise, because if you're not a high-level four-star player or greater, the mathematical probability that you will end up being an NFL-level drafted player is probably 10 to 15% higher than that three-star tier. In a lot of cases, or two-star tier, it's probably like 20% higher at that point. But those are the margins. You know, it's so different when you talk about the true upper echelon. They're the only guys that aren't 80% likely not to make it. So Brew McCoy falls into that category of not in the 80% likely to not be a major success at the collegiate level. Like, those are the odds are, you know, it's like going to Vegas and gambling when we look at recruiting. Wouldn't we all like to? One of the reasons why I like playing poker is because I can control the variables. You know, I can, if I lose money, yeah, you can have bad luck. Yeah, cards can get cold. Yeah, whatever. But at the end of the day, I'm in control of my destiny. I can make decisions. I can fold. I'm not blindly putting money in hopes that I get really lucky, because that's what Vegas is. Vegas is putting your cash down on a game where the odds are stacked against you. And, you know, the whole point of Vegas, and it's why you look at sports gambling, it's why they just did a documentary on Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson, 42-1 odds. We're all looking for the safest bet possible that will still win us the most amount of money. And I feel like it's a bit, I feel like Penn and Teller a little bit. And I'm going to be honest with you guys moving forward. I've thought about this. Like, how do I relay the truth about the stuff that I've discovered in a decade plus worth of research? How do I convey this to you guys in a way that is real, but at the same time doesn't harm my business? Because like, my business is built on recruiting in a lot of ways. For many of the subscribers that are on this site, they showed up because they're diehard recruiting. And we're all diehard recruiting nuts, or a lot of us are. But the truth of the matter is, if we're talking about a national top 250, there's about 70, 75 guys max who have odds that are stacked in ways that aren't dangerous bets. Everything from 75 to 250 to 500 to 750. The difference between a national 750 kid and a national top 250 kid is narrower. Like, the odds of those players evolving and emerging into NFL level talent, the margin is slighter between those two tiers than it is between a national top 75 kid and let's say a national 125 kid. There's a grand canyon of difference when you're talking about the elite of the elite of the elite. And I think, you know, as I've had a lot of time to think about it, I think it speaks to how hard it is to get this stuff right. I always tell people, look, if we were doing a pros and cons lists of prospects and things, if they make it, they're just really good. They were really good. But that's not the only reasons why they might not make it. I mean, they could be failures as prospects, but they could flunk out of school. They could have injuries. They can get homesick. They could get hit by buses. Like, they can go to jail. Like, think about all the girl problems. I'll never forget that Mike Williams from the class of 2002, not the most recent Mike Williams, the Mike Williams of 2002 was a starter at Texas. If you talk to former players at the University of Texas, they'll tell you Mike Williams was one of the most talented guys they ever played with. And the story always was that he had a girl issue and he left Texas because of it. And that guy should have played in the NFL. There are all these reasons why a guy will get sidetracked and not make it. And the thing that they've got going for him is there's layers of how good they are. I found myself releasing the Lone Star updated 2019 Top 100 yesterday. And you know, I'll get into this argument where people will tell me a guy that I have ranked 50th should be in the top 25. And I no longer am at a point where I have a healthy appetite to argue that. Okay. Okay. Because once you get past the top 15, the mathematical probability of success just drops off a cliff. So if you're telling me that I've got a guy ranked 20th, but he needs to be in the top 10, that means you think he's a war daddy. You think he's in that category where he's almost 50-50 to be an NFL player. Because it drops off down to 20% pretty quickly. And then you get to the 3 stars and it drops down to 12 to 15% and then to 10%. And you get to the 2 stars and it's like a less than 5% chance. Oh, but Jeff, who calls me Jeff anyway? Oh, but Ketch, there was an article that came out just the other day that talked about, or yesterday, because the NFL Pro Bowl teams were announced and the average star ranking of the offensive lineman in the Pro Bowl is like 2.6. And that just goes to show you nobody knows what they're talking about. And it's like, no, because In every class, there's only a handful of offensive linemen that receive 5-star status. And honestly, I may start doing this next year. I may buck the rival star system. What needs to be in place for me is a 6-star. I think 5 stars should be 6 stars. I think high 4 stars should be 5 stars because they're not the same as anybody else. So I'm making this vow to you right now to start differentiate the way that I personally refer to rankings. I am inventing and I'm creating the 6th star. Dun, dun, dun. No more of this. A national top 50 kid gets counted the same as a national top 300 kid because he's a 4-star. Moving forward, and I've pitched this to rivals, and I know why they won't do it. Because they're the granddaddy. They were here first. Credit to Bobby Burton. He started the star. The rivals metrics that are in place today, Bobby Burton invented them 20 years ago. And then he's part of the group that sold the company, and rivals bought his metrics. And they invented something different over at 24/7. I know why Rivals doesn't want to change 5 stars and why they don't want to create a 6-star, because they've got a brand. Their brand is, with all due respect to people who hate Rivals and think, oh, 24/7 is the best. Ain't nobody ever referencing 24/7 scores. Star rankings. It is the thing that this entire industry identifies players by. But I think, for full transparency, that moving forward, I think Rivals should have a 6-star and a 5-star. And I think that national top 75 needs to be separated from the rest of the kids because they're not the same. Okay. Rant over. I didn't know that I needed to get that out of my system. But yeah, there it is. You know, if you look at the positions, this is a weird recruiting class, man. Because it's got a lot of... when you add the out-of-state talent... I did my LSR recruiting rankings just yesterday, in the last 24 hours or so. And, you know, we're at a point where the Longhorns, according to Rivals, have 2 of the top 30 prospects in Texas. I think that number is actually 4. I think there are a couple of players that I think Texas has slightly undervalued. And, you know, the margins are small to a certain degree. Like, I think Tyler Owens is a top 25 prospect in the state of Texas. I think he's really close to that tier that I'm talking about, where he's at the high end of the guys that, for me, just missed the cut of being in that elite of the elite territory. I think he's really good. I think another guy that is up, I think Texas has a number of guys that are in that 4-star category that have that 20 to 25% chance of becoming NFL players. I just don't know that they're in that tier above that. But if you were to add Braden Leibrock, if you were to add Myron Warren, if you were to add Jake Smith, obviously, or Chris Adamora, or Darian Brown. I think if you add those guys into, if this were a year where the state of Texas, where Texas didn't go out of state that much, but all of the kids they have were inside the state of Texas, we'd be talking about them having 10 of the top 25, top 10 of the top 30 prospects in the entire state. So, you know, there's not a ton of elite of the elite talent, but there's a lot, actually, of talent just below that tier. And so there's a reason why the class is regarded right now as a national top 10 class. It's really good. If you just look at the raw data. It's when you dig a little deeper behind the commitment list, when you look at the numbers, when you really start to realize that, you know, there some areas are stronger than others. Look, we know that the skill positions, they're out of this world good. I mean, Kennedy Lewis, Marcus Washington, Jordan Whittington, Jake Smith, those 4 cats. That's a national level wide receiver class. DBs the same thing. Adamora, Owens, Marcus Caldwell, Kenyatta Watson. Again, that's a class that, you add it all up together, that's 2 mid-level 4-stars, a low-level 4-star, and a high 3-star. But And the linebacker class is solid. It's up front on both the offense and the defensive lines that you have question marks about. Texas right now only has one guy that signed on the offensive line, Javon Shepherd, waiting until February. Who the hell knows what that kid's going to do? I don't. Ask me today. I think Texas, but, you know, it sure looks like A&M is a school that he just can't put to bed. Everybody's favorite bathroom attendant, Taylor Ham, reporting earlier today, and he does have access to Shepherd, that Shepherd's going to take an official visit to Texas A&M, so buckle up. So that's an area of need that hasn't yet been addressed the way that it needs to be. That's why Andrew Coker was a loss. That's why Hookfin is a loss. Even though those guys are not elite of the elite prospects, Texas does need some volume on the offensive line. You know, I think Darian Brown as a running back, okay, he's a good, solid prospect. Again, we've already established that probably isn't enough. I think the tight end class is really good. The defensive line isn't good enough yet. I think that, you know, you need to at some point be getting true impact, badass mamma jammas on the defensive line. I think Texas has some guys that are really good, but I don't think they have anybody that's great. There's nobody in this class that you look at and go, yep, that guy shows up right away and he can play. And Texas didn't really get that guy a year ago either. It's why DeMarvin Leal was the most important prospect in the state of Texas this year for the Longhorns. Why he was such a big loss when he went to Texas A&M, because there ain't many other guys like him out there to get. He was the guy in state this year up front on the defensive line that was truly a difference-making level prospect, and Texas didn't get that guy. They got good prospects. They didn't get great prospects. And, you know, really and truly, the level of great in this class is just lower than you would like for it to be. This is a class as it currently stands with one national top tier guy. Jordan Whittington is the only, according to the Rivals rankings at this point, and look, I don't completely agree with the Rivals rankings. I would have Tyler Johnson in this group for sure. But Whittington, Johnson, Jake Smith, they're on a different level than everybody else is. And that number of, you may disagree with me. Many of you will, I would imagine. I disagree with the data myself to a certain extent, because like I said, I'm including Tyler Johnson into this group, even though Rivals doesn't have him ranked at that level. Not yet, anyway. A lot of these rankings could still change in this last month or two of the recruiting process, because the All-Star games are coming up, and I'm really excited by the number of high-level prospects from the state of Texas on the commitment list, too, that will be participating in these camps. And the games matter less than the week's worth of practice, where you get to see a lot of reps, elite against elite, and you get a real idea. Someone asked me about Baylor Cup, and, you know, there's no getting around the fact that he's played against lower level of competition, for those that don't know, the tight end that's going to Texas A&M. But I can't wait to see him in San Antonio for the U.S. Army All-Star Game. I want to hear how his weeks of practices go, because if you're someone who thinks that that's a valid criticism, that, you know, he just looks good because he's playing against a bunch of little guys, well, we'll find out. We'll find out, like, really where he is. But this is a class that could use more nuclear weapons, and I feel like that's not well in the Metroplex. This isn't a class that's strong in Dallas at all. I'm not going to beat that dead horse anymore. Not today, anyway. The lack of volume for elite of the elite prospects, and probably just not having those... Not addressing the biggest needs that existed in this class in the kind of way that you wanted, if you're Tom Herman, to address your needs. And he'll talk about how this was a really good class, and he'll say all the right things today when he talks to the media later today. But at the same time, we're talking about a situation where if we'd had this conversation 12 months ago, his expectations and his appetite for what would be in this class would be higher. So it may very well finish just inside the top 10 from a national class, but needs weren't quite met. There's just some holes in the resume on this class. Doesn't change the fact that it's a very good class. And again, that out-of-state group may be the best that we've ever seen the University of Texas sign in 1 year. It has saved the class. And if you added those players, if this was a year where Texas, again, I'm going to repeat this again. I want this to be like the last thing that I say so that nobody suggests that I just went on like a big negative tangent in this podcast. If you add the out-of-state guys to the Texas kids, if I was doing a Lone Star 100 and I included the out-of-state kids with the in-state kids, you'd be left with a recruiting class that has between 8 and 10 state top 25, top 30, top prospects. And that's nothing to sneeze at. That's where you want your in-state recruit. What you want is to have 8 or 10 of those guys and then 4 or 5 out-of-state guys. So this is a recruiting class that's probably 5 big-time dudes away from being a top 5 class and a type of group that you would say, yeah, man, that's a national monster. Because I think the margins matter. I think there is a because think about it. This class isn't as good as last year's class. Last year's class was a top 10 class. This one isn't. So when I say that there's a difference between top 5 and top 10 in recruiting, there is. There's a tier. There's a drop-off. And I think this is a good year for everybody to kind of be reminded of that. That, oh, okay. Because this is a class where we did some things and didn't get some things that we needed to. If those things had happened, that's how you get to top 5. Anyway, I will be back. This was just supposed to be like an early snapshot. We'll have more commentary, more podcasts here on the Yak as we continue to break down National Signing Day 1 of 2019, which is, you know, still in 2018. Don't let the details get in the way. I'm Jeff Ketchum. This is the Orange Bloods Podcast. We are on the Yak. Shout out to Texas Card House. Go play some poker. You know, when your family comes to town for Christmas, you're going to need a way to get away. Play some cards.